passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Wednesday has arrived. Thanks so much for dropping by this afternoon, and we will do our best to keep you company. Good afternoon. Welcome in. Let's get right to it with some headlines and why this Alabama defense deserves more respect. Caleb Downs, one of the reasons, but there are many, many more. Look at these numbers. 15.8, second in the SEC, yards per rush second, sacks second, and those numbers could get better before they change. National scene, AP ranking stagnant with few big upsets, pushing voters to shake up the polls, written by Ralph Russo. He'll join us later. This week's AP Top 25 has combined for 16 losses. 14 of those losses are to other teams currently ranked. How about this? The AD from Washington taking a swipe at Ohio State and Texas. If budgets won championships, Ohio State and Texas would win everything. They haven't won much lately. Thank you, Mr. Dannon. I'll have some more yogurt. And this on ESPN from Chris Lowe. Nick Saban, Alabama again show they can't be counted out. I don't know how many times Chris has told us that over the years when the Gravediggers moved in, but it looked like he was right again. Chris Lowe joining us out in College Station the other day. Chris, great to have you here. And the man in Tuscaloosa continues to have the last laugh. Tell us all about it.
For now, we'll reconvene here in about a month to see how correct that is. But no, they look like a team right now, Paul, that's getting better. The defense is really, this is the type of disruptive defense Knicks had when they've been at their best, in getting after the quarterback, creating negative plays, which was the goal coming into this season. And the quarterback, Jalen Milroe, seems to be gaining confidence because in talking to guys on that staff after that game, he's just getting more reps, game reps, practice reps, more confidence. The kids around him are more confident in him. And I think this is when, in talking to someone very close to Saban, this is when he does his best work. When he knows he's got a football team that's hungry, that's, yes, flawed, and yes, making, you know, the kinds of mistakes you can't continue to make, but one also that a lot of people had sort of forgotten about nationally when they lost to Texas in week two, and now sort of flying under the radar. He's able to sort of take this team from where they were, pick themselves back up off the ground, and get better and better. I tell you, standing outside that locker room Saturday, if you didn't know, if you just dropped in from Mars, Paul, you would never know they won that football game because he was on them pretty good.
And let's continue on that, Chris, because I mean, this is clearly a flawed team. We know that, especially offensively, especially up front. But they're overcoming that. Take us inside that conundrum and especially what does it look like the rest of the way?
Well, they got he said to me, I talked to him briefly, he just said that we're just making it too hard on ourselves. I think that's the thing that they've got to clean up. You know, if they continue to have double-digit penalties, turnovers, someone's going to get them, and he knows that. Even with the schedule is pretty manageable for him. We've got three straight home games. And I think that's the thing that he's really sort of pressed upon the most. And he told me before the season, he knew this. His eyes were wide open coming into this year. This was a different type of challenge for him and the program. They didn't have an NFL surefire first-round draft pick quarterback. He knew that. He had two new coordinators. The staff has turned over a ton over the last few years, and that's something he acknowledged had probably been more of a problem than he thought it would be for different reasons. They've had guys going to be head coaches, et cetera. But when he's having to teach the coaches over and over again how he wants it done, and, oh, by the way, their depth is not what it once was because of the portal, and that's the same problem every team's having. The margin for error for this team was not going to be as great as it was for the 20 team, for the 17 team, for the 16 team, and that's why, as you point out, some of these things that they're doing, some of the penalties and some of the mistakes, they've got to get a hold of those if they're going to finish this thing out and get to Atlanta.
Chris Lowe joining us, writing about Nick Saban. Chris, I want to talk about that staff for a second. Let's start with Tommy Rees, because, you know, we all know how much Coach Saban embraced him. But early on, things were looking pretty grim with the confusion over Jalen Milroe. Can you get inside of all that? And what now seems like an obvious choice did not seem like that after 2 weeks.
I think they're still we're still trying to find their identity as an offense. And they didn't know who their quarterback was going to be. When I was there in June and spent some time with him, he really didn't know. I mean, I think there was a sense among some that it might be Ty Simpson, but Milroe had stayed there all summer. He'd worked hard. I think he gained a lot of the confidence among the players. They bring in Buckner from Notre Dame. You know, obviously, there was a connection there with Rees because he played under him. So they go into the preseason, and it's wide open. I think that was part of what happened offensively, why they just weren't exactly what they hoped they would be. And it took them a while. I think Nick had promised. He told all those kids he was going to give them a chance to play in the game. I think that's how close it was in the preseason. And Simpson and Buckner played against South Florida. Milroe didn't play at all. I think at that point it was pretty clear that Milroe was their best option, and he's been the guy ever since. And I think you've sort of seen them adapt a little bit better, use him, play more to his strengths, which is throwing the football down the field. And I think what teams have tried to do to them, and this is the kind of thing that I think we'll catch up with, is they said, all right, we're not going to let you run it, so you're going to have to beat us down the field. Well, he did that Saturday against Texas A&M. Can they continue to do that, Paul, against Arkansas, Tennessee, LSU, Auburn, some of the teams they've got left on their schedule? I don't know. I'll make this prediction. If they can't improve their run game, they're not going to win the rest of their games gaining 23 yards on the ground. They've got to be better in the run game than they are right now.
Chris, let me flip over to the defensive side, because you've covered and known Kevin Steele a very long time. And we all were watching this in real time thinking, okay, this defense has some work to do, but it seems like it's getting better. And then Lane Kiffin drops acid on everybody 3 weeks ago and says that Kevin Steele is no longer calling the plays. Coach Saban addressed it. He had a rather bizarre comment yesterday, simply saying, I'm not publicly talking about the coordinators. Can you get inside that conversation and help us understand what's going on?
You mean Lane said something controversial?
He did.
Alabama week?
Yes.
That's surprising. Listen, you know as well as anybody, whose defense is that?
Nick Saban's.
It's Nick Saban's defense. Has been, always will be. He's had a lot of different coordinators. And I think some guys like Kirby Smart, Jeremy Pruitt certainly was one. Muschamp, those guys knew that defense inside and out. And I think Kevin still does too. He's worked with him a lot of time. You know, so this is his third time. So there's a lot of eyes that are on that defense, but no set of eyes are more important than Nick Saban's. And you know, it's always been a little bit of a team effort as they put in the plan during the week. I think they did make some adjustments, and I think Nick said that. One thing he was really upset about in the Texas game is some of the calls, not necessarily just from Kevin Steele, but some of the calls were not getting into the game or getting the players as quickly as he wanted. I think they took some measures, did some things to sort of change that up. But I just think he's to the point to where, you know, he's not going to get inside internally what's going on or how they're doing things. I think he likes the way this defense has progressed. He likes the way there is a set of creating a lot more negative plays and playing with a lot of confidence. I mean, I was there in College Station, and you could tell coming out of the second half, even though Bama was down, defensively, they set the tone early. And the play, if they go on and win, Paul, the rest of their games and get to Atlanta, the play I will point back to that changed the complexion of their season is the play that Caleb Downs made, the interception there in the third quarter. Great play. It was right where it needed to be. They had just thrown a pick, and that completely changed that game around. And defensively, Alabama's starting to get those types of plays right now on that side of the ball.
Great stuff, as always, from Chris Lowe. Nobody knows more than Chris. We appreciate the time. Let's move on and tell you what the rest of the day looks like here in the middle of the week as we get ready for week 7. How about Takeo joining us in a couple of minutes? Nathan King covers the Tigers of Auburn, and Ralph Russo, the college football editor of the AP. That and your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Here on the beginning of the program, Takeo Spikes joining us, so he'll be on Out of Pocket later on. Takeo, everybody has gone ahead and just awarded Alabama the West. Are you buying that?
Nope. I don't buy it at all. I do believe Alabama is the team that's trending up, but the reality of it is, you know, you got a Texas A&M out there. They only have one loss. You look at LSU, when we're talking about conference losses, LSU only one loss too as well. So they are the team that's had the most relevant win lately. But the West is still wide open because you still got to take into account LSU has to play Texas A&M. Bama has to play LSU. So it's a lot of uncertainty still going on. And then also looking at the game this weekend with LSU playing against Auburn. So I'm not going to say Bama is going to run away with it.
As you look at Alabama, we know what they're doing well. Their defense is shored up. They're, you know, Milroe is exceeding expectations, but they have no running game, and they're penalty prone. Does that minimize the margin for error?
Yeah, it does minimize it because, for me, Paul, you have to look at it and just say, what is sustainable? You know, so, and when you look at Alabama's team, for me, I felt like it was somewhat of an aberration when you look at the performance. More so in a sense of, the defense played lights out, outstanding every time they needed to make a play, whether or not blocking a field goal, getting a tackle for a loss, or even turning the ball back over with the safety, getting 2 points for the offense, which was struggling. They did it. I done been on a lot of great defenses, several great defenses and a lot of good defenses. You can't go out and expect to get that type of result every game.
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean that you can't be successful and it doesn't mean you can't be dominant. But that was a hell of a win, what they went down to Texas A&M and what they were able to do. But overall, they need more help from the running game, as you already stated. And offensively, I think Milroe has done a very good job of recognizing. To me, this is where I've seen him grow. I knew coming into that game, Texas A&M had one area of concern on the defensive side. When you blitz a lot, you leave cornerbacks out to dry. And number two, I think it was 26, the cornerback, they went after him every time it was a blitz. And I charted it just sitting at home watching it. So for me, he's grown in that area as far as understanding what matchups I like when I see the blitz is coming.
So let's head to Knoxville for a second. A&M comes up there after this loss. I feel like we know a lot about A&M. I don't know anything about Tennessee. What do you know?
Tennessee leading rushing team, rushing offense in the SEC. And I think the reason why a lot of people don't know a lot about Tennessee is because of we are so quick to think hurry up offense, meaning or it's going to equate to hurry up points. That's not the case anymore. This team is methodical about the way that they go about and do the run their offense. They don't have the deep ball threat as they had a year ago with Hendon Hooker. So now it's more so, let's get the ball to the stars and let them work. For me, I look at the offense, and I know it's not necessarily West Coast offense, but it has some of the same principles. Let's create space and let our guys with the skill set, once they get the ball, they make a move, boom, you go off for a touchdown. So that's what I see offensively when you look at Tennessee. Defensively, James Pierce Jr., I thought he's done an amazing job. We're going to have Coach Heupel on our show, Out of Pocket, a little bit later. And one of the things I'm curious to ask him about is, you know, when he played against South Carolina a week ago, he went to his defensive line and told them, look, guys, we're not going to win this game unless if it starts up front with you. You have to be able to create havoc. And they did. They went out and got 6 sacks against the South Carolina bad offensive line. So when we talk about this defense coordinated by Tim Banks, I think the best thing they do is calculate the perfect time to call blitzes. And it's not so much of we're just going to bring the backers. It's more so of bringing the nickelbacks. You bring in a dime star guys labeled as the star. So they do a pretty good job on the defensive side as far as getting after it.
You mentioned Auburn going down to LSU. LSU's defense seems to be a wreck, but they made a couple of stops that saved their season the other day. What about Auburn, which is has played really hard, but match that up for us?
As much as I can throw out numbers right now, I don't even really think it matters in this type of game. The reason why, if you look at it from a historical content, this game is usually a low-scoring game. Both teams know each other well. Both teams are not afraid of each other. And when you look at it from a stat-wise, you got the worst passing offense, one of the worst in the nation with Auburn's. And then you got they're going up against one of the worst passing defenses in the nation with LSU. Now, the thing about LSU, too, also as well, they don't stop the run. And we know Auburn is a top three team when it comes to rushing the football. So I think the bye week will be very beneficial to Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers. And it's a matter of, can they jump on LSU and keep it up at a pace to where hopefully Jaden Daniels can't pull out the magic
so
and bring
him
back?
Answer? I mean, how in the world do they stop him? Nobody has.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can. And I think we've seen that, especially I thought he was dead to rights in that Missouri game. I tweeted it out third, fourth quarter. It's amazing watching what he's doing. He put the team on his back and decided, I'm not going to throw it. I'm just going to run it. And that happened late in the
fourth. Take us through that. You know what he's going to do. You're on the other side of the ball. Set it up for us. And is there there's got to be a method to the madness. I mean, defensively, what would you be doing if you were calling the shots on the defensive side?
Well, you can't let him sit back there and throw it. That's number one. That's one thing I will say. Ron Roberts, I'm pretty sure Ron Roberts is not going to let his team sit back and allow Jaden just to throw the ball everywhere. I think also what's important is when you start sending blitzers, what Jaden is so good at doing is being able to escape the pocket with the rush coming at him with the blitz. And when you escape the pocket, it creates lanes. That's exactly what he did going up against Missouri. And that's the reason why you're starting to see, or you will see him have a 30-yard run, a 40-yard run, because there's no pursuit. All of the pursuit is downfield, and they've ran the receivers off. And so now it's you got to deal with the receiver trying to block you and also a very good runner with the football in his hands in the open field. It's damn if you do, damn if you don't, Paul. That's how I see it.
Much he's already alluded to Coach Hype being on the program tonight. Jaylen Milroe, big show on tap on Out of Pocket tonight at 7 p.m.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back as we continue here, let's check in with Stacy in Birmingham next. Hey, Stacy.
What's up, Paul?
Hey there.
You know, I got your back. I got your back from yesterday in reference to the caller named Darren. Boy, you know you can't call the Paul Feinbaum Show trying to mess with Paul, man. I want to let you know Larry got a zapper, and he's ready to use it at any time. Paul, I sent you an email in reference to what I want to say to JK. Can they pull that email up I sent you?
We'll look for it during the break, but I don't think we have it yet.
Well, when you find it during the break, I want you to pull that up for JK, and that's all I need to say in reference to that. And I hope you find it so you can put it up. I just sent it to you a couple of minutes ago. But keep talking about Alabama and championship. How many championships does Miami have? Five, am I correct?
I believe you're right, yes.
Nick Saban got six as a coach.
Well, Saban has seven.
JK.
He has six at Alabama.
Right, at Alabama, and then one at LSU, right?
That is correct, yes.
Right, but we're just talking about Alabama. He still has more championships at one school than his whole program got. JK can't even have a seat at the kids' table. But I just wanted to check up for you, Paul, for yesterday when Darren called trying to find your email.
And Stacy, thanks for sending it and appreciate your back, having my back. I need somebody to have my back the way things are going. John is in Louisville. Hey, John.
Oh, I've got your back, too. You know that, right?
Correct.
Hey, great opening interview with Chris Lowe. I think, and it was Trey, the good caller from Tuscaloosa, touched on it yesterday, the 14 penalties, the six sacks, the 23 yards running. And by the way, I thought there was a Mark Cristobal moment in that game as well when, with 7 seconds left, a kneel-down play. Didn't he throw a soft pass out to the flat?
He sure did.
That was crazy. I know. But anyways, I think it's all at Reese's doorstep on that. Hey, Paul, before I get to Mark Stoops, I thought your fourth hour was just rocking with AJ and Legend and the angry have-to-wait caller. And then there was a caller, I think, who said there was another caller who works as a janitor at Dudley and Bossier.
That is correct.
Do you recall that? Have we checked that out yet?
We have our investigators on that right now.
Who is he referring to, though?
He was referring to Augie.
Oh, no. He works at Arrogant, Snively, and Snob. That's not Augie. Anyways, before I get to Mark Stoops, in reference to Darren, I would suggest he buy a Paul Feinbaum Show VIP Pass subscription. The benefits include a Paul Feinbaum bobblehead, a Paul Feinbaum Show mug. You get, you get all kinds of benefits, obviously, but...
And just for the record, I do not take the entirety of the profits. I only take 90%.
Yeah, and the good thing, one of the other benefits, you get that signed copy of the My Conference is Better Than Your Conference.
That,
so you empty out of your basement.
You get a
no
you
weight.
You also get a rag to wipe the dust off the book.
I know, and a no weight call privilege. But let's get to Stoops. His record in the SEC through into his 11th year is 34-51.
Right.
I think he's overpaid, and I think he hasn't delivered. And a little bit like John Calipari, another overpaid coach who complained he didn't have a new building. I think they need to produce before they complain, don't you?
Well, he walked it back in the most awkward walk back I've seen at least since 2 o'clock in Washington.
I missed that part. Anyways, get those VIP subscriptions. They're almost as good as the Black Hat Gold card. That gets you into everything.
The Black Hat Gold card gets you into the Gold Club, too.
Yeah, I won't touch that. Have a good show, Paul.
Thank you. Remember that club in Atlanta? Ben is in North Carolina. Hello, Ben.
Mr. Feinbaum, can you hear me, sir?
I can. Thank you.
Mr. Feinbaum, I always call you at least twice a year. I listen to you all the time. Huge Georgia fan. But every time I call, I just want to emphasize how thankful I am to have a internet connection, to have a house, to have a schedule where I can sit down and commit to getting on your show. The guy that called yesterday, Darren, and I don't want to spend that much time on him, he's missing the whole point. College football season, whether you're an Alabama fan or a Georgia fan or an LSU fan, it brings people together. People who would never have talked to each other, never had anything in common, come together. And you facilitate that. You help that happen. And the South is the greatest place for football. The Southeastern Conference is always great. And if you didn't have the camaraderie and the fellowship that came with college sports or sports in general, it wouldn't be worth playing. You don't remember, I remember when we beat so-and-so. You remember that group of guys that you hung out with and you beat them with. So I really hate that people don't emphasize. Man, why would you complain when you get on the line? Why? It's like it's nonsensical and it's really unhealthy. So I'm thankful that I got y'all, and I always am thankful that you're on. You're a legend. The Georgia Bulldogs haven't lost in forever. Not only are we bragging about beating Kentucky, we're bragging about beating everybody. So it's great for me. I'm very thankful for you. And I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope everybody just realizes what college football does, especially in the South, is bridges gaps. It always has. It always will.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate the call. We continue here, and Dogleg Lefty is up next.
Paul, how are you doing, man?
Very well. Thank you.
I'm good. Look, I want to follow up, and I know we don't want to beat a dead horse about this NIL comment about Stoops, but I wanted to – I pulled up some information for you. You know, I go way back to when players took underwater basket weaving and watered the football fields with automatic timers and everything for money and everything. But I've worked with professional athletes and college athletes, and I saw this coming in the early 2000s. Are you familiar with the Dreamfield group, Paul?
I've heard of them. I'm not sure I can tell you much about it, but.
Okay. So basically, I think it's a bunch of lawyers that sit down and they negotiate these NIL deals for the athletes. Their guidelines and the definition of an NIL, it says that it's pursuant to the rules of the NCAA, the school, and the state. Schools can only act as a resource for legal and compliance questions. They cannot facilitate deals. So Stoops is wrong. And he needs to apologize, saying Georgia bought players. I know you know this, but I think a lot of the listeners out there are thinking that Georgia is buying these players, boosters, and businesses, especially in the Atlanta area, are very hot on NIL deals. But these players are going to go where they see the best opportunity for exposure. You know that. Most of our viewers know that. But some are thinking that, well, these schools are cheating. And it's a different world. Kirby Smart has taken the high road on this. He does not criticize Stoops for this. I think he understands what Stoops was trying to say. Stoops just needs to come out and apologize and make it clear.
Well,
okay?
Here's what Stoops said today. In typical fashion, he said it was taken out of context, which is 100% not true. I heard it, and it's clear what he said. I mean, the idea that that's all he talked about may have been out of context, but it was very specific what he said. And I think sometimes just own up to it instead of trying to
exactly.
Just like last year during the Saban-Jimbo thing, everybody tried to say, well, I didn't really mean that. I wasn't talking about that. I mean, it's so absurd.
So the other stat I want to point out to you is CBSSports.com, April 5th, 2023, lists all the SEC schools spending with their athletic budget. This is where your recruiting money goes, okay? Georgia outspends everybody by 35%. Texas A&M is second. Alabama is fourth. And then you go down to Kentucky, and Kentucky only spends $917,000, where Georgia is spending $4,506,000 on recruiting. So that's the difference. Boosters and donors give money for that. They don't pay players directly, or they shouldn't, okay? But I want all the callers to understand that when someone is criticized in the SEC, everybody needs to speak up and defend. I didn't hear that yesterday from a lot of people. And I think a lot of people think, well, yeah, let's beat up on Georgia because they're on top right now. But, you know, I want to try to support all the schools like this when something like this happens. And I think all the callers need to start doing that.
No, I agree
more
with you, Lefty. Hey, thanks for the call. I mean, in the end, Stoops came out very petty and small. There's no washing that around. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, continuing with more of your calls. How about Larry in Houston? Good afternoon, Larry.
Hey. Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
And just had a question about the game at A&M. I was up there at the game. And, you know, there were rumors a few days before the game that Melrose was possibly having a little bit of a hamstring issue.
Right.
And I was wondering if you'd ever heard anything more about that, because it appeared to me that they didn't really use him in his running game much. I don't think they had more than one or two designed running plays for him during the game. And the only time he ran was when he got chased out of the pocket.
I know what everybody denied it. There's no way of really knowing, but if he did have a hamstring injury, I think it played to Alabama's benefit because they were more effective doing what he did.
Yeah, I noticed in that game that for once he was able to kind of move up in the pocket and be successful with his long field passes, which was really good. The other thing I was just curious about, that stadium, when they rebuilt that stadium, they purposely did it in order to make as much noise as they possibly could, and it was obviously effective on Alabama with, I guess, 8 or 9 procedural penalties. But Alabama knew that going in, and it appears to me that they didn't really do a lot of practicing with a lot of loud noise in their practice facilities because it didn't seem to pay off very
good. Yeah, but Larry,
good.
I don't think it matters because this is not a very disciplined team. And, we saw the exact same thing last year in Austin and in Knoxville, and it nearly cost them one game, and it probably did cost them another. And I think that's one reason why you heard from Chris Lowe earlier, who cast a little bit of doubt on the rest of the way, because if the defense does not play its A game, which it did the other day, then, could someone else get them? And I think many people believe the answer is yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be a problem for the rest of the season. They got to get it together. I was happy to see that the offensive line seemed to do a little better job than they have in the previous games to protect Melrose. I've been kind of concerned about the fact they were bragging at the beginning of the season that they had such a huge line. Well, sometimes that huge line just doesn't move very well.
You were
for
there,
pass protection.
I have some serious questions about DJ Durkin's play calling. And I felt like they really made some errors in that. But thanks for the call. The line held up a couple of times. But it is going to be under pressure the rest of the way. And you don't have to have an elite defensive line like Texas A&M. Tito is in Atlanta. Hello, Tito.
What's going on, Paul?
Hey there.
Good to hear from you again.
Thank you.
I just want to tell you, man, hey, kudos to you having that guy Darren the other day, man. He was rude. But it was funny what he said about your ears. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say, find my question. All right. So who do you think are the two best teams in the SEC right now?
Well, I think the answer is pretty obvious. Whether it holds up or not, I think it's Alabama and Georgia.
Okay, so that's my question. Thank you. Now, if you had to put your money on one of those teams to win the championship right now, today, who would it be? And give me your honest opinion.
Tito, strongly believe it's Georgia.
Thank you. I'm glad you said it. You're an honest man, Paul. I just want to tell you, man, I respect you a whole lot. And I want to accommodate you on all your achievements, and I respect your opinion a whole lot. And I love your platform because it's like a reality show. It cracks me up every day, and I enjoy being a part of it. It's like only show I know that let the viewers have an opinion, and I respect that a whole lot. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your honest opinion.
I appreciate you saying that, and I really think that's why we're here. You can get a lot of this other stuff anywhere else, but can you get calls like that and some of the other ones that we have? Johnny is in Duluth, Georgia. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. How are you?
Thank you. We're doing great.
Hey, that was a crazy call by Larry yesterday. I've noticed that you are getting a lot more women calling the show, and I think it'll be about to double after he dropped the Wally love on you. I was wondering, Paul, I had a couple questions if you'd humor me. It amazes me these coaches make, $6, $8, $10 million a year. Do you think they have any formal media training? Because I just can't believe these guys make the gaffes like they do.
Johnny,
I know they're
in
an emotional state.
They all have training, but it's a matter of whether arrogance and common sense overwhelms hubris.
Yeah, it just amazes me. I know they're in an emotional state, and I think they see guys like Saban use the media to his advantage, but it stops there. They don't stop and pause and see how he actually uses it. What Ryan Day
Johnny,
did, I mean, was two steps back and one back.
Being subjected to what I would call White House press room questions where folks are throwing grenades left and right, but most of the questions that these coaches get are kindergarten-like.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was also wondering, Paul, this last weekend I read a review of the Rolling Stones have a new album coming out, and I think Mick Jagger's 86, if I'm not mistaken. I'm wondering if you'll get that album and if you have a great Rolling Stones memory you'd share.
You know, I don't plan on getting it. And I... You know, I made this mistake a couple of years ago, Johnny. I was on a plane. Mick's only 80, by the way. He's a young man. And Paul McCartney put out a new record. And I said, okay, I'm flying to New York. I'm going to listen to this. And I didn't like one song. And I'm thinking, why, when you have had as many masterpieces as Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Paul McCartney and all these guys, enough already. I mean, I don't really care if at 80 you found the fountain of creativity. I want to listen to your stuff that made you famous, and I'm pretty steadfast on that about new artists. And somebody, there's a great story. Elton John once criticized Billy Joel for not putting out any new music. I don't think Billy Joel's had a new album in 30 years, and he said, Elton, he said, why do you put out so much crap? But because when you are as great as some of these guys are, leave it, which I think applies to a lot of people in this industry as well. It applies to everyone. You know, where do you leave it? We're going to leave it right here. We are 1 hour in and coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.